give and take relationships. So it is important to know who are our mahram and who are our non, who are mahram to us and who are non-mahram. Of course, generally speaking, a mahram is one who is who cannot be married under any circumstances, no matter what the situation, okay?
Right.
It is absolutely forbidden to marry a mahram, okay? And of course, one should look at who a person can marry and who a person cannot marry. Mm-hmm. If a person cannot be married under any circumstances, so that that woman is actually is a mahram. And if a person can be married at any situation or any under any circumstances, and it can be imagined, at least it can be assumed that, of course, marriage is permissible and she is marriageable,
right,
then of course she is mahram to you. And of course, when she's non-mahram to you, and of course you have to stay away from her, you have to, let's say, you should not look at her hair, at her body and her private part. She should observe hijab, she should observe the Islamic dress code, and you cannot live together with with her in the same room, and you cannot joke with her, you cannot express love and intimacy with her. And these are some of the things you can.
Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh. Let me cut you in. In fact, we promise our dear audience to be following up this Mahramiya rules, in fact, in the episodes to come. Thank you very much for listening to us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
The United States continues to lob accusations of human rights abuses, cyber attacks, and other criminal activity at Russia, China, and several other players in the global south. The United States recently dismissed Syria's elections as undemocratic, doing the same to Bolivia in 2019 and Venezuela the year after. The United States allows itself to invade countries like Iraq in the name of democracy, to steal Iran's oil in the name of counterterrorism, and to antagonize even its own allies for daring to do business with Russia. Therefore, is it not reasonable to pause and ask whether the United States itself practices what it preaches? I definitely think it is. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. Since the aftermath of World War II, the United States has attempted to push a rules-based international order, proclaiming itself a champion of democracy and human rights. In the years since, this claim has been proven to be largely misguided at best, and some would say a false pretense in order to intimidate and control other nations. On numerous occasions, both under Trump and Biden, the United States committed what can only be described as acts of piracy against Iran. Venezuela has been under brutal U.S. sanctions for the last decades. Donald Trump ramped those sanctions up, causing Venezuela's economic situation to worsen exponentially and infrastructure to deteriorate rapidly. Although Venezuela sits on the world's largest oil reserves, it cannot refine this oil and has a significant fuel shortage. Venezuelan companies have also been cut off from the rest of the world due to targeted sanctions on its banking and oil sectors and cannot offload or sell any oil in exchange for fuel. One solution offered up by Iran was to trade Venezuelan gold for Iranian fuel. In the summer of 2020, Iran sent its first fuel tankers to Caracas, bringing much-needed fuel with them to the Bolivarian Republic. With many ships, completing their journey successfully and unhindered. In August of 2020, the United States took control of some vessels and stole the oil. The Trump administration then proceeded to sell this oil, making millions in the process. To no one's surprise, this practice has continued under the Biden administration, which has chosen to keep virtually all of the dirty imperialist practices of the Trump administration going. On May 31st, 2021, the Biden administration went ahead and did exactly the same as Trump and sold off millions of barrels of Iranian oil that they had stolen at sea. Just like pirates, the unilateral sanctions imposed by the U.S. on Iran, Venezuela, Syria, and other countries continue to undermine international law and inflict enormous suffering on millions of civilians. Countries under brutal sanctions naturally try to find a way to circumvent what is essentially siege warfare, to mitigate the economic crisis and suffering brought upon them. And how does the United States respond? It engages in further violations, resorting to acts of piracy. Venezuela has been cut off from world markets. In order to barter, it has attempted to use its gold reserves. One of these reserves lies in the Bank of England in London. Since 2019, $1 billion worth of gold belonging to Venezuela has been stolen, confiscated by the Bank of England at the behest of the Americans and the U.S.-backed opposition led by Juan Guaido. A court case is now unfolding in Britain to decide the legitimacy of the Venezuelan government and to whom the gold rightfully belongs. Just imagine that. A British court is going to decide who the real government in Venezuela is, completely ignoring the fact that Maduro's government was democratically elected, is officially recognized by the Venezuelan people, by the United Nations, and the international community at large. This attempt to steal the gold is in order to block Venezuela from being able to circumvent the cruel sanctions that the West has wielded against Venezuela. More recently, in June 2021, Iran has sent additional ships to Latin America. The Biden administration subsequently issued a so-called warning to Venezuela and Cuba not to allow Iranian ships to dock. It has also accused Iran of sending weapons to Venezuela. And once again, we see here the colonial mindset where the United States speaks to other countries like they are children who need supervision and ignores their sovereignty and right to self-determination. If Iran and Venezuela want to trade with each other over international waters, this is business between Iran and Venezuela, all right? Secondly, Biden has no right to issue warnings to Iran nor Venezuela for docking ships on their land. These are not U.S. colonies. They are not U.S. territories. You see, this is precisely the level of absurdity that one hears from Western governments and equally from the mainstream media, who continue to think and speak quite brazenly in the same imperialist manner with this colonial mindset. And speaking of Iranian ships, we've also seen Iran sending several fuel tankers to Syria in recent months. Syria is experiencing its own fuel shortages because, unsurprisingly, the United States is stealing its oil in the northeastern regions of Hasakeh and Deir ez-Zor. Due to the fuel crisis in Syria and the crippling sanctions imposed by the United States and the European Union, Iran has attempted to mitigate the situation. However, several tankers have been hit in what appear to be acts of sabotage attributed to Israel in recent months. As we can see, the United States steals Syrian oil, steals Iranian oil, and then profits off of this theft. Whether at land or at sea, this can only be described for what it is, piracy. And through the help of the British, Venezuelan gold is also being stolen at the behest of the Americans. This is not only morally reprehensible, but very clearly a brazen disregard for international law and maritime rules. Lebanon has been suffering its own economic crisis for the last years. The inflation, coupled with the lack of foreign currency reserves and the fuel crisis, have resulted in a severe hit to living standards. Recently, in June of 2021, Hezbollah's leader, Sayed Nasrallah, gave a televised speech to commemorate the 30-year anniversary of Manar TV. During the speech, he spoke of the ills that the Lebanese people are suffering and facing, and he issued a striking proposition. He said that if the Lebanese government cannot contend with the economic crisis, that Hezbollah will go negotiate with Iran to import fuel directly. And just dare the Lebanese authorities try and stop this. This was met with praise by many who see the now defunct Lebanese government as unable to handle, but also responsible for the economic woes they face. And some rival MPs in Lebanon, of course, retorted with fears that this would bring on sanctions from the West. Now, funnily enough, very shortly thereafter, it was revealed that the U.S.-backed government in Iraq would be doubling its oil supply to Lebanon from 500,000 to 1 million tons a year. Some suggested that it was Nasrallah's speech that resulted in the Americans and Iraqis, by extension, being so scared that they prompted this action. Nevertheless, it is crucial to underscore how much of a hand the United States, how much of a hand the West has in destabilizing countries around the world, and in particular in the Middle East, as we've seen time and time again. Even when it comes to matters of negotiation, such as the talks to revive the Iran nuclear deal or Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, we see again that there is no respect for international agreements. Signed in 2015, the deal, the JCPOA, did not even last the length of one presidential term and was ripped up by Donald Trump in 2018. It seems, unfortunately, that the idea of principles, of respecting one's own word, these things do not carry any meaning. The Biden administration has promised to re-enter the agreement, but still beats around the bush when it comes to re-implementation and has only wasted time thus far. Now, one would think that the United States would be more lenient on its own allies, but this often is not the case. The United States is very effective at pressuring even its own allies into abdicating their own sovereignty. A perfect example of this is Germany. In 2003, when the United States kidnapped and tortured a German citizen, Khaled al-Masri, who was wrongfully accused of being a terrorist, Germany demanded that the CIA agents involved be extradited to face justice. Diplomatic cables, later published by WikiLeaks, revealed extensive evidence of how the United States successfully pressured the German government not to pursue the case against the 13 CIA agents responsible for this kidnapping and torture of al-Masri. Germany succumbed to U.S. pressure and threw one of its own citizens under the bus, allowing the United States to get away with such heinous acts. In 2013, owing to the revelations by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden, it became known that the United States was spying on the phone of German Chancellor Angela Merkel. This caused a scandal, but ultimately resulted in nothing more than a scandal and a media frenzy, and essentially a slap on the wrist. Just recently, in May 2021, it was revealed that Denmark also was implicated in this affair, aiding the United States in bugging the German Chancellor's phone. In late 2020, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo went on a tour of Europe, and he specifically left Germany out of this tour. And instead, he visited only its neighboring countries, signaling the United States' discontent with Germany's work on Russia's Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Pompeo went to countries like Austria and Poland, giving speeches about how evil Iran and China are, and he openly discouraged those European governments from importing Chinese products, like from Huawei, and warned them not to cooperate with Russia on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Pompeo accused the Chinese Communist Party of controlling the tech giant Huawei and putting spyware on its devices, which, given the revelations about NSA surveillance and spying, and the cooperation of Silicon Valley companies like Microsoft, Google, and Yahoo with the United States national security apparatus, is so hypocritical that it becomes hilarious. The United States does not want anyone to participate in the construction or use of Russia's Nord Stream 2 pipeline because the Americans do not want Russia to cement a dominant market share in European gas. Instead, they want this for their ally, Ukraine, or maybe even Qatar and other countries close to them to get the upper hand. The gist of it is pretty clear. When it comes to business, the United States doesn't care about what is good for its so-called allies, nor does it care about their sovereignty. The United States wants its big tech companies in Silicon Valley to maintain their monopoly over the tech industry. And it wants its allies and oil and gas partners to maintain theirs over their respective industries. Anyone who stands in the way will be cut off or given the cold shoulder. Another remarkable event that unfolded was when Donald Trump claimed that Germany wasn't paying its bills to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, which subsequently caused a diplomatic row. NATO was created in 1949 as a military alliance between the United States and other Western European countries to counter the Soviet Union. Another way of looking at it, especially post-Cold War, it's a protection racket. This is very similar to how the mafia operates. When the mafia says, pay us money or we will beat you up, people pay the mafia to be protected from the mafia itself. A similar parallel can be drawn between such protection rackets and NATO. In June 2020, Trump called Germany delinquent with its payments, and the disgruntled president of the United States promptly withdrew thousands of U.S. troops stationed there. And even then, Germany still remains home to the largest amount of U.S. troops in all of Europe. We'll be right back after this short break.
is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities.
Now joining me to discuss more is Alex Rubenstein, investigative journalist and reporter at Substack. Thanks for taking the time, Alex. It's wonderful to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Alex, you know, oftentimes we see the United States talk about human rights abuses in other countries. You know, they point the finger at China and they slander them with allegations of human rights abuses. They do the same to Russia, to Iran, to China. And they're also pushing this lab leak theory now with China. And, you know, it's not just the U.S. government doing this. It's the entire mainstream media apparatus that's equally geared towards repeating these claims. Now, inversely, why don't you think there's much criticism of the United States' human rights record and undemocratic practices in the mainstream media?
Well, we have to understand the media as an extension of the U.S. empire, and you know, a lot of what fuels media reports on this kind of thing is like the NGO industrial complex and the think tanks. These organizations that are highly funded by, you know, defense contractors or billionaires, billionaire foundations, because they have the resources to actually devote, you know, investigative power into these kinds of allegations, whether they're true or not. They're the ones that are able to, you know, furnish the statistics for the media to report on. So, you know, the NGO industrial complex, the think tanks, and the media are all just really an extension of the U.S. empire. That's why it's important to have outlets like Press TV and others that push back on this kind of thing. So there's just not money for that kind of information that would really expose the U.S. crimes abroad, which are committed, you know, just about everywhere. If you look at the world map, you know, you're going to see just about every country is being meddled in one way or another, even allies, you know, because God forbid that they have a leftist or social democratic person ascend to power there. You know, that would be very bad because the United States needs its clients compliant.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, when you speak about allies, much like the Trump administration, the Biden administration is very much against the Nord Stream 2 pipeline that's being built by Russia and Germany. What do you think the goal of the United States is when it recently decides to sanction Russia, but not Germany?
Well, I think that the United States might be on thin ice with Germany, especially considering what the Obama administration did spying on Chancellor Angela Merkel's phones. So, obviously, they want Germany to remain powerful as a bulwark against any kind of, spread of an economic ideology that is different from neoliberalism, you know, which is something that they've been fighting in that area since, you know, World War II, and they continue to do in, like, Belarus, for example. You know, big part of this. The reason that the United States is taking such aggressive measures against Belarus and issuing sanctions and such is because they have a different economic model, is because they're allied with Russia, excuse me. So it's part of that.
So what else is in the toolbox for the United States to kind of whip its allies into shape when they misbehave? You know, what does the U.S. resort to in contrast to Iran and Syria and how it treats them with complete animosity?
Right. Well, I mean, I think globally, whether they're allies or not, the thing is that the military option is not in the toolbox, right? It's the world is becoming increasingly multipolar, and the United States can't compete militarily. So what they do use is all these economic incentives. You know, we have to understand that the IMF, the World Bank, these are also extensions of the U.S. empire. They're controlled by the U.S. They're based in Washington. The U.S. has veto power over any major policy in those organizations. So economics is really the leverage and information. So it's, you know, it's people say, oh, Trump didn't start a new war, but he's been continuing and expanding and he created hybrid war, which is really the modus operandi of the U.S. government at this point, like I said, because the military option is off the table, because also the United States can't afford to go to war, really. So they're resorting to these dirty tricks, these economic measures. Sabotage is a big part of the playbook. Whether that be, you know, setting an Iranian ship on fire or recently we saw piracy enter the game with the seizure of $110 million worth of Iranian crude oil. We see the same thing in Syria where the United States is occupying illegally Syrian oil fields and what the Bank of England did to Venezuela, seizing its gold. This is all part of the agenda here.
Why do you think it is that the United States and, of course, Britain and the West have an issue grasping the concept of sovereignty when it comes to Iran, when it comes to Syria, and, of course, the global South in general?
Well, because they don't do everything the United States tells them to, because they exercise their sovereignty. I mean, a country like Germany might have some veneer of sovereignty, but they do whatever the U.S. tells them to do. Pretty much. I mean, there are exceptions, Nord Stream 2, but, you know, it's their exercise of their sovereignty. We want to do a regime change in Venezuela. We want to do a regime change in Iran. We want to do one in China. So, of course, the fact that they're trading is frightening to the United States government, because even though it's well within their rights to pick their trading partners, and pick who they want to sell to, who they want to buy from, and who they want in the case of China, who they want to invest in.
Well, what do you make of all these people in the media, all these politicians who claim that Biden is a return to normalcy, right? That he's going to go meet Putin very soon, right? And he's going to teach Putin a lesson, and he's going to tell him about human rights issues and cyber attacks. Do you think Joe Biden, do you think the United States is in a position to be lecturing others on human rights issues?
Well, it's totally hypocritical. I mean, it's Joe Biden did a regime change in Ukraine, and he did it in the name of fighting corruption. Months later, after the coup, his son got, $50,000 a month to do basically nothing for a strategically important, nationally strategically important oil and gas company. So, you want to talk about corruption, there you go. The return to normalcy is a return of what we're seeing now, piracy, of breaking international law. It's like they're going to talk to Putin about human rights while forbidding Israel to be tried in the International Criminal Court. It's absurd. And I think that the world is realizing just how absurd it is. And we're starting to see, with Biden, who is like kind of, letting all the all the alumni from the Obama administration kind of take the charge. I think with that kind of weak figurehead, the world is is realizing that the United States is not going to be able to lead. And it's going to be up to countries like China, who have a competent leader and a more actually humanitarian approach to foreign policy, to show us the way going forward.
Alex, just as a last question to wrap up, there was a reporter in the briefing room who was asking about the scars that the European leaders sustained and how they were traumatized by the Trump presidency. What do you think of that statement that Trump was just an anomaly?
Yeah, I mean, of course he was a bit of an anomaly because it's not so common for U.S. presidents to actually say truthful things. And he did everyone, he's kind of like Kissinger, where he was like, this is actually how it is. The intelligence community cannot be trusted. And that's not like to say that Trump was a good president. He wasn't, but he did show the face of the empire very explicitly and, making a fool out of himself really reflected how the United States acts on the international stage. So I will give him credit for that. But in terms of actual policy, we see that all his worst policies, all of Trump's worst policies, are being continued by the Biden administration, and in some cases made worse.
apparently, in the West, it's acceptable for the United States and Britain to behave like pirates who not only use violent means, sending their armed forces to bomb, kill, and occupy other countries, but of course to impose sanctions, to starve people to death and then steal Venezuelan gold, steal oil from Iran, from Syria, and behave like bandits. This is state piracy. This is organized crime at the state level. These imperialist nations are nothing more than international gangsters and criminals. They call themselves democratic, and they talk of freedom and rules-based international order, but there is nothing democratic, nor free, nor orderly about any of their actions. For all their talk of protecting human rights, there is no respect for human rights, nor for international law, treaties, and agreements. Their war on terror, through their war on terror, the Americans and their allies have violated the Geneva and Hague Conventions innumerable times. The Rome Statute has not even been fully ratified by the UK and was never adopted by the US. When it comes to the nuclear talks, the United States tore up the JCPOA, then accuses Iran of not following the deal. It's the world upside down. The Biden administration continues to beat around the bush, stalling and making excuses, wasting time, refusing to rejoin the deal, and then gives lectures about international law as it continues to impose crippling sanctions. When sovereign nations like Syria, Lebanon, Iran, Cuba, and Venezuela attempt to engage in mutual trade and partnership and cooperation, the West speaks about them as if they are children. Again, it appears that Joe Biden, much like his predecessors, has a very tough time grasping the concept of sovereignty. Iran, Venezuela, Syria, and all other countries do not need permission from the United States to trade with each other. They are not your colonies, yes? They are sovereign nations, and they have the right to engage in mutual trade and partnership and cooperation of their own accord. The fact that one must re-explain the basic concept of sovereignty is a testament to how awful the Western mainstream media is and how it brainwashes people with a colonial mindset and makes them accept this imperialist mentality and accept these imperialist actions perpetuated by their governments. It is precisely because Iran, Syria, Venezuela, and others in the global South exercise their sovereignty that the United States tries to rob them of it and target them for regime change. Countries who do not do as they're told by Uncle Sam will be called undemocratic and illegitimate and accused of the most notorious crimes in order to justify foreign intervention. As for the so-called allies of the United States, they have long abdicated their sovereignty and free will. They remain in the good grace of the U.S. only because they do not step out of line and do as they're told. The United States will even kidnap and torture European citizens and get away with it because European countries have no backbone and won't stand up to the United States, even when it comes to their own citizens. The United States does not even respect its own allies, and they do not respect themselves for allowing the U.S. to treat them in such a manner. As Henry Kissinger, a butcher and prominent Secretary of State, once said, the United States has no permanent friends or enemies, only interests. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
limelight.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott claims that the open border policies of the Biden administration have caused a surge in illegal border crossings. The numbers support Abbott. Dealing with migrants from countries with low vaccination rates has been very hazardous for the Border Patrol. Since the start of the pandemic, more than 8,600 CBP employees have tested positive for COVID-19, and 31 have passed away. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Nolan Rappert Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Biden Failed to Reconcile Border Policy with Science. Hundreds of thousands cross unvaccinated. Stay tuned for the details, please. When Joe Biden was campaigning for the presidency, his plan for securing values as a nation of immigrants included a promise to reverse Trump's immigration enforcement and border security measures. He also promised to follow the science in fighting COVID-19. Biden should have waited until the deadly COVID-19 pandemic was over before reversing Trump's border security measures, or at the very least implemented scientific protocols at the border, not only to prevent the spread of the virus among migrants who cross the border illegally, but also to prevent them from bringing the virus, including potentially dangerous variants, into the interior of the U.S. Last March, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, determined that admitting certain aliens from Canada and Mexico created a serious danger of bringing COVID-19 into the United States, regardless of the country of origin. Accordingly, it issued an order temporarily prohibiting the admission of such aliens pursuant to its authority under Sections 362 and 365 of the Public Health Service Act, and the order permitted the rapid expulsion of aliens who would otherwise be held in crowded areas while being processed at a port of entry or a border patrol station. These areas were not designed to isolate or permit social distancing of persons who are or may be infected with a highly transmissible disease. Typically, these apply to aliens seeking admission without proper documents and aliens apprehended after making an illegal crossing at a land border. On February 17th, Biden announced an exception for unaccompanied alien children. The Border Patrol apprehends thousands of unaccompanied alien children every month at the border with Mexico. 5,688 in January, 9,269 in February, 18,724 in March, 16,910 in April, and 13,906 in May. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, statistics indicate that about 75% of the children are between the ages of 15 and 17, but more than 100 unaccompanied children each month this year were under 6 years of age. But it's not just children. Trump established the Migrant Protection Protocol, MPP, program, which has been referred to as the Remain in Mexico policy. It required certain aliens entering or seeking admission to the United States from Mexico, illegally or without proper documentation to return to Mexico and wait there for the duration of their immigration proceedings. Trump claimed that this provided a safer and more orderly immigration process, which discouraged individuals from taking advantage of immigration system by making a false persecution claim just to be able to enter and remain in the United States. Biden paused that program shortly after taking office on January 20th, allowing around 11,000 of the aliens in the program to enter the United States before ending the program entirely on June 1st. It is too soon to determine how many of the 68,000 people who will return to Mexico pursuant to this program will be entering the United States to wait there for the duration of their immigration proceedings. No one knows how many new asylum seekers will come now that the program has been ended. In any case, ending the MPP program almost certainly will cause a surge in asylum cases for immigration courts, which already are struggling unsuccessfully with 1,322,938 case backlog. The average wait for a hearing is 934 days. Texas Governor Greg Abbott claims that the open border policies of the Biden administration have caused a surge in illegal border crossings. The numbers support Abbott. Encounters at the southwest border averaged around 70,000 a month in the 4 months before Biden took office, and then rose to 97,640 in February, his first full month in office, to 169,204 in March, to 173,686 in April, and were 172,011 in May. Almost all of them originate from Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. And the COVID-19 vaccination rate in those countries has been very low. As of June 12th, only a very small percentage of their populations had been fully vaccinated. Mexico 12%, Honduras 0.6%, El Salvador 14%, and Guatemala 0.8%. This means that 612,541 illegal crossers were apprehended during the first 4 months of the Biden presidency. The adult and family units making these crossings are not likely to have been vaccinated. Dealing with migrants from countries with low vaccination rates has been very hazardous for the Border Patrol. Since the start of the pandemic, more than 8,600 CBP employees have been tested positive for COVID-19, and 31 have passed away. According to CDC estimates, as of June 11th, 52%, that is about 171 million, of the 328 million people in the United States had received at least one COVID-19 vaccination. But this also means that 48%, that is about 157 million, still have no protection, and resistance to being vaccinated is growing. According to Beth Blur, who helps to run the Johns Hopkins University Coronavirus Resource Center, a growing number of states are slowing or winding down their reports on COVID-19 cases. But COVID-19 is still killing more than 200 people a day in the United States of America. COVID-19 variants are also a problem. Officials are warning people about highly contagious variants that could set back national progress against the pandemic if they become more widespread. The Delta variant rapidly established dominance in the United Kingdom. It currently makes up more than 90% of all COVID-19 cases there. It already makes up more than 6% of the cases in the United States. The real fear is a variant that does not respond to current vaccines. If the Biden administration is going to let people from low vaccination countries into the U.S., he should at least test them for COVID-19 before releasing them. Astonishingly, it's not easy to confirm that's happening, which may be an indication it's not. In March, according to a fact check by an Austin, Texas TV news station, the federal government appeared to have released more than 100 migrants into the interior who later tested positive. According to the TV station, Border Patrol doesn't have the resources to do the testing, so local Texas communities were testing the migrants released to them. The report noted those communities can't stop those migrants from traveling elsewhere. All air passengers over the age of 2 who are coming to the U.S. from a foreign country, including citizens and lawful permanent residents, have to be tested for COVID-19 no more than 3 days before they board their flight to the U.S. Why should the standard be less strict for undocumented aliens coming to the U.S. from countries with very low vaccination rates?
وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّاهُ وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents. Humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. Previously, we looked at Islam as a religion that is based on peace, a religion that is based on establishing human rights, a religion that is based on applying the human rights, defending the human rights, standing up for human rights, and anything human rights, basically, compared to other religions like Christianity or Judaism. So we spoke about Christianity and Judaism previously. Now, I want to look at Christianity specifically because we didn't speak too much about it. We did say, because we're trying to look at the human rights from a Christian perspective, how the religion itself views people. When Christianity was formed and it became a power, so pretty much most of the European world was under the command of the church itself. So French, all the way to England, was under the command of the church, and they used to invade other countries under the command of the church, under the blessings of the church, and the church was the highest power, and the Pope was the highest power in the land. So when they tried to take power and you know, like an was like put their hands in everywhere, a lot of people had to suffer the wrath of the Christian church, the oppression of the Christian church. And Also, we need to keep in mind, we're not talking about the actual Christianity, the actual faith of Isa alayhi salam, Jesus Christ, peace be upon him. We're talking about the fabricated version of it that came to light to control and oppress the masses. So that needs to be in mind, because sometimes when a person says, here's Christianity, automatically he assumes that the actual religion of Allah. No, we're talking about the fabricated version of it. So when the church tried to take power and control over the land and oppress people, obviously it faced opposition from people themselves, from common people themselves, from tribes, from I don't know. And slowly that resistance grew and grew and grew, and in return the church itself weakened. The power of the church is not what it used to be before. Even countries themselves, they tried to be more secular, where they had to divide and they had to cut between religion and between the state. So they said there has to be separate things. The state is one thing, the religion is another. So we need to separate. So it got weakened and it lost its power. And then the Christian countries, they started dividing, they started having borders, and they started having passports. And then you have different Christian states, as it was before, as it is now. For example, we say the majority of England, for example, or America, or this country, the majority are Christian people. So it's a Christian state. Even the numbers are changing, but we refer to them as Christian states. Being a Christian state, you would assume, because it is a Christianity, a religion of Allah, that the people who live in this Christian state, they should have, first and foremost, they should have their own human rights preserved, right? And you would assume that if someone else comes into these countries, their human rights should also be preserved. So in the same way that a Christian who lives in his Christian country enjoys the benefits of the system that he enjoys, if someone else comes in, you would assume he should do the same, he should enjoy the same. But the fact is not, and it was back then, and it is now not the same as what we might think. How? Let's take a break, and inshallah we continue.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program for humanity. Just before the break, we said that the Western countries, or the countries that assume and claim to be a Christian country, because of the majority of the Christians that live in it, when it comes to the aspect and the matter of human rights, you see that they differentiate between their people and those who come to them from other places, be it from different races and different religions, or sometimes even could be a Christian from another country. You see that they do not have the same rights. For example, when it comes to trying to stay in the country, you're not allowed. You need to get a visa first. And once your visa expires, you need to leave. If you don't leave, you might be subject to fines. You might be subject to prison. So that is not a human right, is it? If it's a human right, then it's the land of God, and it is a Christian state, so I should be able to move around freely. At least, okay, I agree, let's have some sort of laws, but I should be able to stay in this country, right? But no. But when it comes to work, for example, the citizen of the country, they have the right to work. Anyone else who comes in the country, in some countries, you do not have the right to work, or if you work, there are only certain things you can do, or if you can work, your wages are cut. cut to minimum, like they would limit your wages, because you know they're trying to give more superiority to the citizens. If it's matters of opportunities, you could be more qualified than the citizen of that country is, but yet they would give it to someone less qualified because he is a citizen and you are not. So when it comes to treating and dealing people in these Christian countries, based on the fact that they are all human beings, that they all enjoy the same rights given to them by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that notion is not there. Where in Islam, as in comparison, Islam says it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter where you're from, doesn't matter who, what your faith is. If you come to an Islamic state, you can live in Islamic state. And obviously, when I say an Islamic state, I'm not talking about the Arabic countries now, because when Islam came, when the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam came, he did not draw any borders. He did not name countries. He says this is the land of Allah and everyone is free to roam. So what we have today, and you know, Gulf areas and I don't know, like places in Africa and places in Middle East, these are just made by men and actually made by the West. If we need to be technical about it, the West came and they divided the Muslim countries into borders and stuff. Before that, any Muslim could go from, for example, from Syria to Mecca, from Syria to Yemen, from Yemen to Iraq, and no one would care. There would be no borders. There would be no passports. But then the West came, and that all changed. So under an Islamic state, a person could come to a Muslim state, a Muslim city. He could work normally as everyone else. He will get his right like anyone else. And he has a right to stay just like anyone else. When he works, he gets the same wages as everyone else. And there will be no harm done to him. If he is not harming anyone, harm should not come to him. This is how Islam looks at people, because it looks at human beings as a group. It does not differentiate with them based on the color of their passport or the strength of the passport or how many visas can you obtain on one passport. No, Islam says you are all the same to me. The land is the land of Allah and you are all the servants of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We will continue in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. Ya Rabbi salli ala Muhammad wa ali. Ya Rabbi salli ala Muhammad wa ali.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.